Listen, sucker, ring the bell, see?
This is Movie Fighters, the show where Chris Sims of ComicsAlliance.com and elsewhere on the internet, and I, Matt Wilson, also of ComicsAlliance.com and also of elsewhere on the internet, we watch movies and we beat them up. And after several aborted attempts to watch The Calamari Wrestler...
You would not believe what we have gone through to try to watch The Calamari Wrestler.
We have decided this week to watch the film Gun Crazy, which is a listener demand for a movie that we watch. This is a 1950 film. We are watching it on a free film site, and the description on the site where we're watching the movie is, a well-meaning crackshot husband is pressured by his beautiful marksman wife to go on an interstate robbery spree where he finds out just how depraved and deadly she really is.
Okay, now that sounds exciting. That sounds really good. Like, that is the plot of a movie I would be 1,000,000% into. But I suspect we are going to be mega bored by this.
I mean, look, I am a fan of the noir genre.
You know
full well how I feel about the noir genre. This isn't entirely a noir, from what I can tell. It's more like a B movie, right? That's or like an old thriller, like the poster for this movie, which is great, by the way. The tagline on it is thrill crazy, kill crazy, gun crazy.
I mean, that sounds good. That also sounds like something I would be into.
Yeah. I mean, it seems pretty good. Dalton Trumbo, who, if you know old Hollywood, wrote some pretty classic movies, is a co-writer of this movie. Also, like, weirdly, a mentor of Steve Martin's, if you've read the book Born Standing Up. There's a lot in there about Dalton Trumbo. Based on the poster and the description, we should be into this, right? We should enjoy this.
Yeah, here's what I'm telling you. I mean, there's two factors here. A, I am not a big fan of old movies in general. I am not a film guy. I am not really a film buff. I'm a movie fan. I like watching movies, but I am very popcorn oriented in my movie fandom, despite being a professional film critic in some weird capacity, as we both are. The second problem is that this is a listener demand, and our listeners do not suggest movies because they think we will enjoy them.
That is generally true. You're right about that. However, we have occasionally had listeners suggest movies simply by virtue of the fact that they think they're up our alley and that we're going to like them.
Yeah, I mean, this could be an Inframan situation where I think we both came away from Inframan going, that movie was amazing, why have we never heard of this before?
Yeah.
But I suspect it's going to be a Short Circuit 2 situation where we come away from this going, $100 was not enough.
I think it's most likely to be neither. It's certainly not going to be the train of offensive terribleness that Short Circuit 2 was. It may not be the joy-inducing craziness of Inframan. This movie was suggested by Devin McCullen.
Yes, Destro's cousin.
Yes, and Devin gave us no information about why he suggested Gun Crazy. He simply pointed out that he wanted us to watch the 1950 version of the movie, not the Drew Barrymore version.
Wait, so there's a remake?
Yes, there is a Drew Barrymore version of this movie. We may disagree strongly about this movie. I'm a fan of classic noir cinema. Now, this is not a noir film that gets named along with other greats of the genre. This is not Sunset Boulevard or The Third Man, or even, you know, oh, that Orson Welles movie where Charlton Heston plays a Mexican guy. It's not any of those. But I have a feeling that this could be enjoyable early trash cinema. And if that's what it is, that's my hope. That's my hope, that this is like some kind of classic version of trash cinema. Because for me, old movies are the most fun when they're simply just insanity. Or people who don't entirely know what they're doing, just trying whatever. Like old Ed Wood movies.
Yeah, I mean, I feel that way about old comics, like Golden Age comics, when people are figuring out what comics are on the page.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I certainly hope that's how it's going to be. I suspect that is not how it's going to be, but there's only one way to find out.
That's right. So, folks, we are going to pause here. We are going to watch the 1950 crime drama thriller, perhaps film noir, Gun Crazy. We're going to come back and we're going to talk about this movie. All right, we are back from watching Gun Crazy. And Chris, is this the boring movie that you thought it was going to be?
I love this movie. It is not. I was wrong. You know how rare it is for me to say that. I was wrong to doubt this movie. This movie is fucking amazing.
Like, I'm used to watching these kinds of movies, and it was even not what I expected.
I mean, for starters, it is bananas.
Yeah, it is absolutely what I was hoping for, which is trashy B-cinema from 1950.
And it is such a B-movie, like, to the point where there are characters in this movie that we, like, the two main characters are so, they could not more be the emergency backup Jimmy Stewart and Donna Reed.
And there's another character who plays a circus owner, carnival owner, who is backup Orson Welles.
This is the asylum of its day. This is the Transmorphers of its day.
Yeah. They don't exactly
Was there a movie called Rifle Crazy that also came out in 1950?
They're not exactly Jimmy Stewart or Donna Reed in the way that they act. If anything, the lead actress is doing like an Audrey Hepburn kind of thing, right?
Yeah. She's every actress you've heard of from the 40s and 50s kind of smushed up together.
Yeah.
She's got Veronica Lake hair.
She's got a mid-Atlantic accent, so all her talk about, like, growing... When I grew up, I wasn't so good.
My father had a shooting gallery in Pasadena. I had a car. Oh, it's... this. No, but seriously, go watch this movie. We found it streaming online. It's a million years old, so I think that's fine now. It's also the perfect length, because it is 87 minutes long.
It tells a life-spanning story in those 87 minutes. Because we start with the lead character, whose name is Bart Terre.
We should say, everyone in this movie has a name that is ridiculous.
Bart Terre, we see him, age 14, standing in front of a gun store window. I think it's a pawn shop window.
Yeah. Because
we find out later.
And it's raining. It's like, and they are just dumping water onto a soundstage.
Onto a kid. And the soundstage for this town looks like there's so much water on the ground. This town has no storm drains at all. But he like lovingly looks into the window and sees this gun, and we find out later that this gun is one he used to own. He smashes the pawn shop window, grabs the gun, and starts running away.
Just eats shit on the pavement. Goes straight down into a puddle, which is a recurring theme in this movie.
A key theme of this movie is people falling down. It happens a lot.
there are so many ultra serious scenes that involve people going face first into the water.
Or the ground. Like,
or just the ground. But like the best ones are water.
People
the
fall
ones
down
are,
a lot.
Are in puddles and creeks.
The gun slides over to the feet of the local sheriff, who kind of looks up and shakes his head at little Bart. Cut to a courtroom scene where different people in Bart's life are testifying about what he's been like over the years since
about
he was
Bart's
very little.
Psychopathic love of guns.
Yes. The first thing that happens is that Bart is given a BB gun by his sister.
The first thing that happens is that he's on trial, and the judge is like, okay, why did you steal a gun? And Bart
right.
goes, Bart goes, I love guns. I need a gun. I just have to have a gun. I'm the best shot in Cashville. It's in Cashville.
Yeah, and he says, it's what I want to do for my whole life.
Yeah, all I want to do when I grow up is shoot guns, which is the scariest thing I've ever heard in my life.
It's terrifying.
So a couple of kids come in and they're like, look, Bart loves guns and all he wants to do is shoot guns. And he steals guns so that he can have a gun with him at all times because he doesn't feel complete without holding a gun. But don't worry. He's not weird or anything.
He's not a killer.
Yeah, he's not a killer. And they talk about how they went on a trip up to the mountains and there was a mountain lion. And if they shot it, they could get a bounty.
First, there's the BB gun. And he shoots a baby chick. And right. there is a lengthy shot of a dead chick that almost certainly involves the filmmakers killing a chicken. Like,
yeah, like this is what, they did not have special effects in the 50s. In 1950, they just killed a bird and pointed a camera at it.
So there's that story. Then there's a story about Bart and his two friends, Dave and Clyde, one of whom looks exactly like if you took Clark Kent, not like young Kansas Clark Kent, like adult reporter Clark Kent, and de-aged him to 14. When this character grows up, he doesn't look so much like Clark Kent. As a kid?
He kind of does, though. He is like a 12-year-old cosplaying.
Yeah, that's exactly what
he looks
like.
He could not look more like he was trying to dress like Clark Kent.
One of those kids, and then another kid who eventually becomes the sheriff of Cashville.
He's the sheriff's son.
Okay, he's the sheriff's son.
Because Cashville is a very small town, so there's only three children, and they all know each other. And they're all related to all the adults that we have seen.
They tell a story about going to the mountains and seeing this mountain lion who has a bounty on his head. They're sitting there, and they're like,
Mountain lion on the run from the law.
Yes. And they're like, Bart, shoot this mountain lion. We are not good enough shots to shoot this mountain lion, but you're a great shot. Shoot this mountain lion. So Bart,
by the way, they're like 20 feet away from a mountain lion that's just kind of minding its own business.
Yeah. And Bart gets up and starts pointing the gun toward the mountain lion, and he's like trying to gear up enough to kill this mountain lion.
And he gets like shaky.
Yeah, he gets this is another thing that happens more than once in the movie. Bart is trigger shy even though he loves shooting guns.
Yeah, he just doesn't like shooting living things. So he doesn't shoot the mountain lion, and one of the kids, I think it's the little sheriff's kid, is like, "Yeah, I knew you couldn't shoot." And Bart loses his shit. he's like, "You think I can't shoot?" And he throws a canteen in the air. And he's got like it's like a 22 rifle, but it's like pump action, right?
Yeah.
So he throws his canteen in the air that he's wearing on his hip, because, you know, they're in the mountains. They got canteens and holsters on their hips. And he shoots, like, he unloads the rifle at it, which is bonkers. And it comes out and he is shot, like, clean through it.
Multiple times.
Just to prove he can shoot.
Multiple times he's shot through this canteen.
Yeah.
The third story is about Bart just going to school with a gun.
With a revolver.
Yeah, it's the same,
like a cowboy gun, like a 44.
It's the same revolver that we saw him try to steal right at the beginning of the movie.
Yeah, and like all the kids are crowded around, and they're like all like, "Oh wow, look, a cool gun!"
And the teacher walks in, and she's like, I got to take that gun.
The teacher walks in, and Bart does not hide it at all. No. He just kind of clutches it to his chest.
She doesn't say, you brought a gun to school? Get the fuck out of here.
She doesn't say, okay, everybody out. We're going to go get the police.
Yeah.
Child with a loaded gun in the front row of this classroom.
Like, it is such a weird thing to see a scene with a kid in a school with a gun in 2014 when we know that Columbine happened and so many fucking other school shootings. Like, anybody now would react to seeing a gun in a school by, like, hitting the fucking ground, right?
Yeah, and the teacher just, like, walks up, stands directly in front of him, and she's like, Bart, give me the gun.
Yeah.
Like, as though it's gum.
And like, as Bart's though it's
candy.
And Bart's like, I can't give you this gun. I'm not going to give this to anybody. And she's like, all right, then we're going to have to go see the superintendent. She doesn't say principal. She says superintendent.
Come with me.
Yeah. And eventually, like, they go to the principal's office, they get the gun away from him. And
yeah,
then,
well, the sheriff shows up and he just gives the gun to the sheriff, presumably because he recognizes, you know, game recognizes game.
Right.
He recognizes another gun owner.
And then we cut back to the courtroom and the teacher's talking to the judge. And she's like, well, you know, sometimes boys have to have knives and guns and baseball bats.
She goes, he just had to have the gun in the way that some boys need to have jackknives or baseball bats. And she says something else. There's a third thing that she says that's not a weapon.
Yeah, the third thing is very innocuous, but like,
yeah, it's like, oh, wait, no, I'm sorry. Like, having a knife, a baseball bat, or a gun in school is slightly different from having, like, a blankie.
The judge tells Bart that he's got to get his shit together. Get his life right, and that he's going to send him to a reform school.
And there's so much in this scene of Bart just like, I mean, the kid who plays young Bart is A, great, and B, terrifying. Like, I thought, like, in the first 5 minutes of this movie, I thought this movie was going to be about, like, a serial, like, I'm like, is this the first movie about a serial murderer?
Yeah, the way he plays Bart makes him seem like a maniac.
Yeah, because he needs to have guns. He needs to have a gun. And there's this kid just, like, wide-eyed and deadpan just saying, I gotta have a gun. I need it. I need a gun. And it's like, okay, we're going to send you to reform school. It's like, yeah. No. That is not the place you need to send this child.
Now, does this predate juvie? Were there juvenile halls in 1950? I would assume there had to be.
No, they were just going to send him to grown-up prison. It's also, Bart has no parents. He's being raised by his older sister, who looks like 1950 Drew Barrymore.
Yes.
And so it is kind of Bart's love of guns is kind of blamed on the fact that he has no man in his life. So he has gone out and latched on to a phallic symbol, a murderous phallic symbol.
Yes.
And again, these are not like toy guns. These are guns.
Yeah. So Bart goes and serves his 4 years in boarding school, reform school.
We got to 10 years from then. I think it's about 10 years.
He goes to boarding school.
It's hard to judge ages in the 50s because everybody in the 50s who was an adult looked like they were 45.
Yes. He goes to reform school. Then he goes and joins the army and is a marksman.
Which is weird because this movie's in 1950.
Yeah.
Presumably, if he's doing like a five-year, like it's about 10 years later. So if he does 4 years in reform school and 6 years in the army, he would have joined the army during World War II.
At the end of World War II.
Yeah, well, when the U.S. was like in like full involved in the ETO and the Pacific.
Yeah.
And you would think that like, yeah, Bart has killed several people.
You would think.
Because he's like a sniper. He like talks about how he was a marksman.
He taught marksmanship.
Okay, well that makes sense, I guess.
So he was a drill instructor, not an actual marksman in the field. That's the implication. Because
the cops actually remark on it. When he comes back, the sheriff's son has become a cop, and little Clark Kent has hilariously become a reporter
at the
Cashville News.
Cashville News. The really sad thing is there's an introductory shot of Clark Kent at the Cashville News, and he just does not quite look enough like Clark Kent for it to just be like, this is clearly what they were trying to do.
Yeah, there's actually it's a really interesting scene where they're like, you know, given how much you love guns, I would have thought you would have stayed in the army for life. Like, you just would have been a lifer in the army. And I guess Bart got out because he didn't, you know, he likes guns, but he doesn't like killing, I guess is the thing.
Yeah.
So he didn't want to be part of the army. But he's, you know, he served his term in the army. He's got his army pension, whatever.
Another key thing about Clark Kent, he's wearing the same clothes as an adult that he wore as a child. The exact same clothes, just bigger. Was that a thing in the 50s?
It's this weird jacket.
Yeah, the jacket is cut really weird and held together with a strap.
It's a belted blazer.
Yeah.
Which is, I've never seen a jacket like that. And he wears it constantly. But they go out to the woods. They go to the same set where where they fought the stock footage of the mountain lion. And they're just drinking beer and shooting guns.
Yeah. This is what this is what they do for fun.
Bart has a collection of English dueling pistols. These really fancy handguns. And that never really comes back. Like, that never really matters. Like, it's kind of introduced as a big thing, but it never really... I guess it's just like, hey, in case you forgot, this guy really likes guns.
Well, after the first half hour of the movie or so, that Bart is good at shooting guns doesn't really matter anymore.
Oh, yeah. No, that never comes back. That never, ever comes back.
Okay, so after they go shoot guns for fun, the three friends go to a carnival in town, because that's the only thing anybody ever does for fun in 1950.
So many carnivals in this movie.
Two.
And by so many, we mean two.
But that's enough.
There's a lot.
And that while they're at the carnival, they see a shooting show, a trick shooting demonstration, where a woman named Annie Laurie Starr, who may be a reference to Annie Get Your Gun, I'm not sure.
Obviously, there's Annie Oakley.
Or Annie Oakley, yeah.
Marksman.
Yeah.
And I feel like there's also a famous something star who was a big deal.
Possibly. I don't know. But
I mean, it's a very circusy name, too.
And everything is monogrammed with her initials, which are ALS, which is very discomforting. But it was 1950, so I'll cut up some slack. So she does her little demonstration. She shoots a bunch of balloons. She shoots a glass off a woman's head. She shoots a cigarette in the woman's mouth.
That one gets close.
The woman
that one
who
gets
is
real close.
The woman who is being the target in this is the most calm.
She's so bored.
It's disconcerting how calm she is. But the guy who runs the carnival, who is acting as a barker, who is dressed as a gangster in a pinstriped black suit and looks a little like Orson Welles and talks a little like Orson Welles, says that Annie, or Lori, I guess they call her Lori more than Annie, will challenge somebody in the audience to win $500. The challenge that they do is they each put it's like a tiara or... It looks like the
It's like the Statue of Liberty's crown.
It's like the Statue of Liberty's crown. But instead, there are matches in it.
And we should say, when Lori comes out, who is Peggy Cummins, a very, very beautiful young lady at the time of filming, the look on Bart's face.
Oh, yes.
Oh, my God. It's like, he's like, wait, she likes guns? he has found a sexy lady who's also super into guns. It's you get to see this character's first boner right in front of you,
and it's super weird because he looks kind of like Jimmy Stewart.
Yeah,
so it's like Jimmy Stewart getting a gun boner,
and the way that he talks to her all throughout the weird challenge, he is eye fucking her the whole time.
Oh yeah,
that he is basically giving a gun a hand job. he's like, hey, you know, do you wanna? I want to shoot this gun. Do you want to shoot guns together? And so they kind of do a couple challenges. Like she you know, fans the revolver and hits a bell, and he matches her.
Yeah.
And then they do the thing with the tiaras. And she's like,
I wonder about the physics of this challenge, the probability of this challenge, because the idea is that they put these crowns on their heads, go to the end of the room, and then the other one shoots the matches and lights them. Is that possible?
Yes, it is. It is possible. I've actually seen Jeffrey Boothroyd, who is the guy that Q is named after in the James Bond movies. He is this weird British dude who started writing letters to Ian Fleming, basically actuallying him about the gun that James Bond would use.
Right. There's a great video of Jeffrey Boothroyd from the Dr. No DVD.
Yeah. Is it the one that they aired on the BBC, like, forever ago?
Yeah.
During the filming of Goldfinger?
I'll link to that video in the show notes. It is ludicrous.
Yeah, because this guy, by the way, is a complete weirdo.
Yeah.
He's an internet commenter before the internet. Like, he wrote Ian Fleming a letter, and he's like, actually... James Bond would not be using a Beretta. He'd be using the Walther PPK. He wouldn't be using the stiff leather holster. He'd be using the chamois leather holster. Like, and so Ian Fleming was like, "Well, this guy knows about guns."
And that sounds like a shitty British accent, but that's what that guy sounds like.
Literally, what he sounds like. And part of like this weird during the filming of Goldfinger, they did like a BBC documentary thing on him. And one of the things he does, he actually shoots at a bunch of matches. And it's hilarious because he has to take a couple tries to really get it, and they leave it all in. But yeah, that is a thing you can do.
Okay. It seems
the
rather
weird
improbable.
Thing is that they were like wearing it on their heads, and like Laurie, to kind of intimidate Bart, is like, careful, you know, one time I shot a little too low, implying that she shot a man in the face. And he's like, and he just like kind of, he's like, that's fine. I'm going to shoot on your face. Like it's so weird.
That is not what he says, but...
But, like, that is the... Like, if this movie had been made 50 years later, he would have literally said that.
Yeah. So, she misses one of the matches.
Yes, she misses the last one for a dramatic effect.
He gets them all.
Yes.
And so, you know, Lori and the carnival owner have to cough up $500... So they give him some of the money, and then she gives him a ring that she's wearing to make up the rest of the difference. And he just hands her the ring back, and he says, "I don't think it would fit me." Instantaneous, again, the continued like innuendo, but not goes on, and just like right after that, they're like, "Hey, let's get together."
That and, he doesn't shove his tongue through the ring is amazing.
And she immediately gets him a job with the carnival.
Because he's super good at shooting, so they're going to be like a duo now. They're going to be a double act.
A performance team.
So he gets a matching cowboy outfit. By the way, Peggy Cummins looks amazing in that cowboy outfit.
She has some great costumes, some great outfits throughout this movie.
This might be the first time that they, like, you know, pointed a camera directly at a butt on film in a major movie. The conversation that they have is amazing because she goes, "What else do you do besides shoot?" And his response, and this one I am not making up, his response to that is, "Well, that's been enough so far."
Yeah, and then she asks him if he has a job. She asks him if he has a job, and he goes, "No."
Yeah, because he's just been back living with his sister and her husband and their kids. Her husband that we don't see ever again, but whose name is Ira Flagler.
What a terrible name.
The worst.
Turns out that the boss of the carnival, whose name is Packet.
Packy.
She calls him Packy. His actual name is Packet.
Okay.
He is actually dating Lori.
Sort of.
They have a thing together.
They have a thing together that's him blackmailing her because she shot a man in the face.
Like, he's got kind of her under his thumb. And there's a part where once Bart gets the job at the circus, at the carnival, she says, oh, we can ride together in my car. And Packy's like, no way. He rides with the clown. And they're gonna he's going to room with the clown.
Yeah, the clown whose name is like Bluey Blue. Or
Bluey
something.
Bluey. It's Bluey Bluey.
Bluey Bluey, and yeah.
The next thing we see is Bart in his costume for the performance that he does with Lori. And he's in the trailer with the clown. And the clown's like, you're a fucking idiot. Thinking that you can be with that girl. She's Packy's. You're so stupid. And Bart's like, goes, I don't think so. And he walks out and Packet's like, hey, listen, you're not going to date her. Like, that's not going to happen. And Bart's just kind of like, oh, so that was what this is after all. Okay. Later, there's a scene in Packet and Lori's trailer where Bart just like intimidates Packet by shooting a mirror out from behind him. Like, there's a weird scene where Packet's like sitting on a couch and he's like all strung out on the couch and he's drinking booze and he's kind of being verbally abusive to Lori. And then he starts being sort of physically abusive to Lori. And just as that's happening, Bart walks in and he shoots out that mirror. And Packet says, all right, okay, you're both fired.
This is the last time in the movie that anything resembling a... I guess he shoots the tire out later.
That's the one other time that him being good at shooting matters.
Yeah, from here on out, there is... Like, this is, what, 20 minutes into the movie? Like, 25 minutes into the movie?
Ish. It's the end of the first act.
Yeah, it's the end of the first act. All that has been set up is like, hey, guys... Bart and Lori are really fucking good at guns. Like, they are so good at guns. The only thing that matters for the rest of the movie is that they own guns.
Right.
That they have guns. There's one more time, and that happens about halfway through the movie, that they shoot out a tire. You would think this movie would be full of, like, daring trick shots. But, like, any... time they shoot someone, they're like 2 feet away from them, and they just shoot them like point blank.
And Bart doesn't do that. That's all Lori.
Yeah, I feel like there is no, after the first act, there is no shot in this movie, like gunshot. There is no gunshot in this movie that I could not make.
Except
you
for the
and me,
car tire.
I can probably hit a tire. I'm pretty good at video games, bro.
I feel like if you
and me went on a crime spree, we could be much more daring. Then we probably would not get caught as easily as Lori and Bart either.
As long as you have that reticle that you can see to aim with.
Right.
You're good.
I mean, look, I'll turn on auto aim. I'll select the tire in VATS.
After they get fired, we see Bart and Annie driving in the car, and she's like, what are we going to do now? We don't have jobs anymore. What are we going to do about money? Bart says, we'll be okay. I have money. Hey. I guess we should go to the next town, right?
I guess you need to stop the next town.
We got to go to the Justice of the Peace. Is that okay with you?
It is the weirdest wedding proposal. It's like, we got to go to the Justice of the Peace. She's like, and her response is that how you want it?
Yeah.
And he goes, that's how I want it. Is it cool with you? Is that okay with you?
Yeah.
She's like, yeah, it's okay with me.
So they go to a strange, like, desert outpost, you know, quickie wedding spot.
Yeah, like, the sign literally reads, like, Desert Justice of the Peace.
Yeah.
Get your quick-ass marriage here, no questions asked. And this is where Bart confesses to her that he did 4 years in juvie, basically. Like, hey, before we get married, I want you to know, I was in juvie. And her response is, like, super 50s, because she's like, she turns away dramatically, she's like, you're not getting a bargain either.
Yeah, and she goes, I used to be bad, but I'll try to be good.
Yeah, she is actually from Wales, by the way.
Okay, that makes it all make a lot more sense.
But she also, like, sounds like every... She has the movie accent,
yeah.
Which I guess is, it's actually, what, received pronunciation? It's the stage accent.
Mm-hmm.
So it is super, super big. So they get married, and then we get a little montage of them spending time together. We can't figure out where it happens.
They're on their honeymoon, but it looks like they go across the country to do it.
Yeah, there's a shot of them, like, up in the woods in the mountains, and then there's, like, maybe they're in Las Vegas.
There's weird stuff with, like, waterfalls out in nature, but then they're also in Las Vegas. I don't get what it is, where it is they're supposed to be, but later they say they're in Las Vegas. They were in Las Vegas, because I guess they make some bad bets, and all their money disappears.
I don't even think it's all their money.
Yeah, they run out of money.
No, I don't think they actually run out of money. I think what happens is that they're living on Bart's pension from the army. And there's two of them, and they can only live on Bart's pension. They're on a budget, basically.
Maybe, but there is definitely the implication that they did something in Vegas that made their financial situation much worse.
Well, because all she says is like, I just want to live. You want to live, don't ya?
Yeah, so there's this scene. They've been married for maybe a week.
Yeah, this marriage goes south so fast.
Over money, which is always the way. And she says, all right, you know, because of our money situation, we're going to just have to go be criminals. We're going to have to go do this Bonnie and Clyde thing. Or this marriage is over. We're done. And he goes, he sort of fights back against it for a while. But then there's a scene where, like, he does this weird kiss. And that's the confirmation that they're going to go through a life, like, do this life of crime thing.
She goes, there is so much weird kissing.
There's a great line movie where she says, well, let's end it where we started. On the level.
Yeah, when she is trying to talk him into a life of crime. The conversation where she's trying to talk him into basically becoming a robber is really weird, because it's very clear that they have had this conversation before, and he has been like, what? No, I don't want to be a robber.
Yeah.
But, like, we don't see that conversation. We just see the one where she's like, well, I told you what we could do.
Maybe they've been married a week.
It's so fast. They go so downhill so fast.
So they go on this tear of petty robberies, like small-time robberies, where they hold up gas stations. There's one where they rob a travel agency and Bart shoots a gumball machine.
Yeah, Tom Servo gets taken out in this movie. It's very upsetting.
And we see the amount of money that they're stealing, and it's very, like, small amounts. Like, small amounts of money. It's not really helping them out that much, these robberies. There's a scene where, after one of their robberies, they are driving away from a police car that is pursuing them, and Bart has to shoot out a tire.
Yes.
Now, this is when they decide to go on a big job. They steal a car from a guy from Chicago, and to take that car to a bank, and then they rob the bank, and they get caught, or they get seen on the way out, and police are chasing them. Bart, after much hesitation, shoots out a tire. And it seems really weird why he would be so hesitant and uncertain about just shooting out a car's tire. Later, there's a scene where he explains that the entire time he was hesitating about shooting the tire, he was thinking about shooting the driver.
Which is really weird.
Because he could just shoot the tire. Like,
yeah, like, because he's supposed to be one of basically the best marksman in the world at this point. Like, we've seen him. The first part of the movie is just him doing, like, these amazing shooting feats. So you think he'd just be like, yeah, I'm going to fucking shoot the tire. No big. Obviously, Laurie just wants him to shoot cops all the time. Laurie is constantly trying to get him to kill people.
Yeah, like, there's
when it is not necessary at all.
There's a scene where they're robbing a grocery store, and she gets furious and is about to shoot this like poor defenseless grocer guy, and he's like, "No, no, no, stop! Don't shoot him."
I mean, it's kind of necessary because they have opted to not wear masks at all.
Yes, instead of masks, they just wear get-ups. They wear these...
Sometimes, though. Only sometimes.
Well, when they rob the bank, they're dressed as a cowboy and a cowgirl. And we should mention this when they're robbing the bank. There's a long scene where they're driving up to the bank and just talking about directions. That scene lasts like 2 or 3 minutes. They're just driving around. They're talking about how to get to the bank, where they're going to park. There's one part where she goes, "Turn right here." And he goes, "Yeah." And then she turns left. And finally, they like get up to the bank. And it's this weird, like, almost Tarantino-ish shot.
Tarantino-ish. And I actually figured out what it is. If you go look at the IMDb page, there's a the bank heist. First of all, it's done in one shot, which is actually really impressive.
Yeah.
There's just a cameraman sitting in the back seat of this car while they're driving. The reason there's so much like incidental dialogue is that no one in that town knew they were filming a movie. It's just the people in the bank and Bart and Lori and the cop. So the town is like completely unaware of it. No one knew that they were filming a movie. So he's actually looking for a parking space. Like he is really looking for a parking space as they are going through this this weirdly long one shot sequence. It's really cool, but it's 20 years ahead of its time. It feels like something from a 70s movie, which is why it feels like a Tarantino thing.
It's weird that the dialogue is so kind of boring and innocuous. If this was a Tarantino thing, he would have written like interesting stuff for them to be talking about. But as far as like the shot itself, it's really kind of cool and interesting. And I would not be surprised at all to find out that Tarantino really loves this movie.
Yeah, like that is not surprising at all.
I don't know that it is, but I would not be surprised if he was.
You know, like the thing about Gun Crazy is like, yeah, that's my Tarantino.
Love is really violence, man, you know? So
I mean, this movie is kind of a lot like The True Romance of its day.
Yes, it is. Or like Natural Born Killers. Yeah. maybe Oliver Stone loves this movie, too.
This movie's supposed to be based on Bonnie and Clyde, I think, is what it says. And yet, it's not really like Bonnie and Clyde in that, are we supposed to have a lot of sympathy for Clyde? Because Bonnie is like constantly a bloodthirsty murderer. Like, I kind of thought they were in that together.
The interesting thing that happens after they find that place to park is they stop. Bart gets out and goes into the bank to do the job basically by himself. And this cop starts walking by, right by the door to the bank. And Lori decides that instead of just letting him walk by, what she has to do is get out of the car and start talking to him.
Yeah.
And so she gets out of the car in her cowgirl outfit and starts talking to him. And he's like, "Oh, that's a cute getup. What is that?" She's also holding her gun. And the cop just starts asking her about her gun. He's like, "Oh, look, what's with that gun? Is that English? Is that an English gun?" And she is standing there super nervous and jittery, like looking around. Looking jittery and weird. Bart
comes. She makes a grab for his gun at one point.
Yeah, Bart comes.
He's like, "Oh, sorry, I don't let anybody touch that. I killed a man last year."
Yeah.
Okay, you're gonna just drop that into the convo?
Everybody is way into admitting that they killed people in this movie.
Yes.
Bart comes running out of the bank, and she, like, Vulcan neck pinches the cop, and he goes down immediately.
I think she's supposed to be, like, hitting him with the butt of the gun, but she doesn't, like, hit him in the head or anything. She just, like, karate. It just looks like she's karate chopping his neck, like, really softly.
But he, like, falls like a ton of bricks.
He goes to the ground. He goes down hard.
And they get away, and there's that part where they're shooting out the car tire. But then there's, like, another part where they're in these, like, upper crust, blue bloodish costumes where they're driving through a checkpoint. Like, apparently every state, back in 1950, every state at the state line had a checkpoint.
Yeah, like, there's a part where they're driving to California, and they get stopped by a cop, and the cop's like, carrying any fruits or vegetables?
Yeah, it's like customs. It's like interstate customs.
Are we, like, California was a state in 1950, right?
Yes, it was.
I'm pretty sure it was.
It was. It's very odd.
Did you look it up? Have we looked that up on Wiki? Can we wiki that?
I know it was a state in 1950.
Okay, but did you look it up? Like, I know you think it was a state in 1950.
I know it was a state.
I'm just telling you what Gun Crazy's telling me.
But there are other states that have these checkpoints too. Like, there's a scene where they're dressed up like as preppy people, or in these like blue blood outfits, and they go through a checkpoint, and the cop's like, "Okay, come on through." They wear disguises, but they don't wear masks. It's very strange. So after the bank job, they start showing up in the papers as professional thieves. And they've also been implicated by the carnival owner from earlier in that guy getting shot in the face by Lori. Like, he's gone to the papers and been like, "Hey, that woman shot a guy in the face."
Yeah, he's gone and go, "Hey, I know exactly who these two bank robbers are. Oh, you said they were dressed like cowboys? And they look kind of like Jimmy Stewart and Donna Reed?"
Yeah.
Yeah, I know who that is.
And she killed the guy.
Which is weird, because if it wasn't them, you can just imagine, like, if they had just gone off and you know, bought a house in New Rochelle next to Dick Van Dyke and Laura Petrie, or Mary Tyler Moore, I guess is her real name. Like, imagine the cops just descending on that house in a hail of bullets, because they're both gun collectors.
By the way, the lead actor in this, whose name is John Dahl, he's as much Dick Van Dyke as he is Jimmy Stewart. Like, he's kind of like half of each.
Yeah, I can see that. I can see that.
He's tall and lanky is the main thing. Bart and Lori go on the run. And they decide the place that they're going to go on the run to is Montana. And while they're in Montana, they get snowed in. And they're sitting there, and they're, like, in this weird, like, warehouse with a fire next to them. And she's like, "Can't we get the car out?" And he goes, "No, and we can't ask anybody to help us because we're criminals." And so she goes, "Okay, you know, we can't live like this. We can't keep living like this." And he goes, "Well, I've been wanting to talk to you about this. I want to not do this anymore. I want to not be a criminal anymore." And she goes, "Oh, neither do I. I don't want to be a criminal anymore either. So let's just do one big last job.
One last job.
And we'll make tons of money, and then we can just go buy a house in the country and live peacefully forever." They drive to Albuquerque from Montana, and they set up this plan to get jobs at a meat processing plant.
At the armor plant. It's like product placement.
It kind of is, yeah. She gets a job in the office, in the payroll office, and he gets a job as like a truck driver, delivery guy. They get jobs to do this plan.
Yeah, she's working in the secretarial pool.
And they're like there enough, like they're good at, like they've been in these jobs long enough by the time we see that scene that people know who they are. They know their names and act like.
And they are also so bad at hiding that they're going to do a crime.
Yeah.
There's a part where one of the guys on the loading dock is helping Bart unload the truck. And he's like, "You're never going to get rich working, driving a truck, huh?" Like, you know, making weird, like, "Hey, our jobs suck," small talk. And Bart is like, "I don't know. You know, my wife, she's got a job here, too. And we're looking to get a lot of money out of this place." It's like, well, that's a weird way to say that.
Yeah. What a strange answer to me just like trying to make small talk with you about our crappy jobs.
You could say we're going to make a killing.
I want to know how long they worked at this meat processing plant.
3 years. Setting up this job, I think.
So on a particular day, Bart loads up a bag with steaks that have been packed in the packing area, mm-hmm. and takes them up to the payroll office because he says that the boss of the payroll office has asked for these steaks for a big cookout that he's having.
A big barbecue party.
Yes, a barbecue party.
They call
party.
It a barbecue party, which is the weirdest thing.
People out west talk different. So he walks into the office and this security guard stops him and goes, "What are you doing? What are you doing with that, you know, bag of stuff?" And he goes, "Oh, I'm just popping in here to see the boss. He told me to bring him these steaks." And the security guard goes, "I don't think he would do that." And Bart goes, "Well, he did." And he lets him go immediately. Nobody is suspicious at all in this movie in 1950.
Yeah. Which, why would you be? That guy's been working there 3 years.
Yeah. So he walks into the office, he goes to the back, and Lori comes with him. And they walk into, well, they walk in there, they go to the secretary for the boss and say, "Brought these steaks for him." And she goes, "No, he would not do this. If he had, I would know about it. So I'm going to go talk to him." That's when Lori pulls out her gun. She and the boss, the secretary and the boss, both hit the deck. They go to the ground. And Bart starts going and getting, collecting the money from the payroll office. The secretary sort of leans up and starts looking at the burglar alarm that's in the office. And is just kind of looking at it. And it's like clearly labeled burglar alarm.
It's like it's in the Batcave.
Yes. And Lori kind of notices it too. And they're kind of standing there both looking at it. Bart comes out with the money and is like, "Okay, I got it. Let's go." So he and Lori turn around and start running out. The secretary pulls the alarm. The alarm starts going off. And Lori just like blast shoots that secretary dead.
From like 3 feet away.
Yeah.
Like, again, I feel like it's a shot I could make.
And it's weird because Bart is like right in front of her as she's shooting that secretary. And he doesn't notice. Because later on he's like, "Hey, what was that shooting I heard as we were leaving?" And she has to be like, "Oh yeah, I shot that and killed that secretary."
Listen, baby, don't worry about it.
They escape in this very roundabout way in their car. There's like a lot of like running around in circles for a minute as they're trying to drive away. And then they finally get out of the gate of the armor plant, and Lori also shoots and kills a security guard. They drive out to the suburbs, to a neighborhood. Bart stays in the car. She grabs the bag of money and goes and gets in another car. And they're going to like drive separate ways and go live in separate places for 3 months. I do not get this part of the plan. Because they're both suspects. Like, what good does splitting up do them?
Well, because they're going to be looking for one person.
They're going to be looking for two people.
Yeah, oh, yeah, they're going to be looking for two people. They're not going to be looking for one person.
But everybody's seen their faces. Like, if they wore masks, that might make sense. But they don't. They're not wearing masks. Everyone has seen their faces. They have worked at this armor plant for 3 years. Everybody knows who they are.
I like that we've just agreed that they worked there for 3 years. Like, that's continuity now. That's canon.
But as they're both like going off in their separate directions to go their separate ways, Bart decides he can't leave Lori behind for that long. He gets out of his car, goes back to her car, gets in, and they kiss each other, and they drive off. And they start driving to California. Around this time, there is a long scene of a teletype machine informing us that the FBI is now after them. So in California, Bart and Lori kind of feel like they're somewhat safe. They go to Pasadena. She talks about my father's shooting gallery in Pasadena.
I grew up in Pasadena.
You know who? You know what she talks like? She talks like Terrence and Phillip.
Yeah, I think that's accurate.
It's like the South Park guy's idea of a Canadian accent. I don't know if they buy a house on the beach or just like get a hotel room on the beach. But they go somewhere. I guess it's a hotel room. They go somewhere where there's like a view of the beach. They're sitting there. This is where she admits to Bart that she killed that secretary. And Bart's reaction to that is kind of going to be like, well, that sucks. That's going to be really bad for us. I guess I got to get us to Mexico.
No, no, no. She doesn't tell him at that point. She comes in and he's looking at the newspaper. That's right.
It's in the newspaper.
And he says, she's like, what are you doing? And he looks up and goes, I've just been reading about funerals. Not, I've been reading the obituaries.
He said, I've been reading an article about funerals.
Which is so weird. Why would you put it that way?
There is a weird scene when they're in Pasadena where Bart gets out of a cab and goes to a newsstand and purposely buys a newspaper from Albuquerque.
Yeah.
Like, the newsstand has every newspaper from every state. And he buys one from Albuquerque so he can see what has been written about their crimes. And instead, he sees this article about funerals to find out that that secretary died. So he goes and arranges with somebody we never see. Like, I don't know what connections that he has in the LA area, but he goes and arranges for them to get to Mexico. And she says, okay, we're going to Mexico. Hey, can we go out tonight? And Bart's like, I don't see why not. Even though they are on the lam as murderers, they decide, yeah, let's go out. Let's go have some fun. So where do they go?
They got one last night in Pasadena.
Where do they go, Chris?
They go to the carnival.
They go to the carnival. And there's like a montage of them doing stuff at the carnival. They end up at a dance hall.
Matt, what do they wear to the carnival? What do they wear to go on a roller coaster and to the guess your weight game?
He wears a suit.
Right.
She wears a fucking mink stole. That right. is gigantic.
I'm gonna guess that's where the money went.
They end up at a dance hall. They go dancing. They have a fun night. The dance hall looks like a Denny's.
It does. You said it looked like an automat.
As you
and observed. We had a long discussion about automats while we were watching this movie.
I really just want to go somewhere, put a quarter in a window, and pull a piece of pie out of that window. That's all I want. As they're leaving the dance hall, they see these G-men, these FBI guys, standing at the admissions booth to the dance hall. There's an admissions booth to the dance hall. They're showing the ticket taker a picture of Bart and Lori and saying, like, these are murderers. Have you seen them?
No, they've matched up the money.
Oh, is it the money?
They have the serial numbers for all the bills that they stole from the meat processing.
Yeah, yeah. That's how they knew that they were in the California area.
Yeah, but no, they check it. The money that they paid for the tickets to the dance hall, they check against a list of serial numbers.
Okay, either way. There's also...
Maybe go get change, guys.
There's a line that one of the FBI guys gives where he says, this match, we caught them at the hotel too. And so they can't go back to the hotel, which is where they have left all their money. They can't get out of town because they assume that cops are going to be at every train station and bus depot. So they go hop a train. They jump onto a freight train and ride it to Bart's sister's house. Yes, they go back to Cashville.
They take the hobo train to Cashville.
They show up at Bart's sister's house, filthy, and say, like, we gotta stay here. Can we stay here? And Bart's sister's like, I guess.
Bart's sister's like, yeah, I'd kinda rather you didn't, what with you being a murderer and all. There's a point earlier in the film when Bart's niece comes in and she asks her mom, is Uncle Bart a murderer?
Yeah.
Like, no, kid. Uncle Bart is not a murderer. He's a murderer.
But he's not a murderer. Like, that's maintained throughout the movie. He is not a murderer. Lori is.
But he says that he's just as responsible as she is.
He is an accomplice.
He goes into these crimes ready to do some killing.
He is an accessory to murder. So he is guilty of that. As they're at the sister's house, the reporter friend, Clark Kent, goes to the sheriff's office. He gets a phone call telling him about Bart being at his sister's house.
Yeah, because like a mob of children descends on their house and Bart's sister has to go out and be like, hey, my kids have a cold. go find somewhere else to shout, because this is before the video games, so all children can do is stand on a porch and shout.
There's also a scene where Lori and the sister just have this, like, intense tension with one another.
Lori's like, hey, or the sister's like, hey, stop staring at me. I'm doing everything you want me to do. And Lori's like, yeah, well, you also have a phone and you can call the cops, so I'm not going to let you out of my sight. I fucking hate you.
Yeah, and then she, like, takes a cigarette out of her mouth and tosses it on their kitchen table. It's kind of great. Like, I would like more tension between them. And, hey, I think that scene makes it so this movie passes the Bechdel test. Go figure.
Yeah, they do discuss calling the cops. They do not discuss Bart.
No, they do not. There may be another scene where they talk about Bart, but their interaction with each other is about their tension between each other, not about Bart. So Clark Kent goes to the new sheriff, who was the sheriff's son, and says, I think Bart is at his sister's.
Yeah. The neighbor said that she has kept her window shades down and told the other kids that her kids have colds. By the way, we should probably check out the neighbor who's trying to look into his into this lady's windows while her husband's out of town.
All the time.
Yeah. And like, wants to so badly that he calls the cops about it.
Tell her to open her window shades.
The sheriff and the reporter, the sheriff and Clark Kent, go to Bart's sister's house.
Well, first the reporter makes him leave his gun at the police station. And the sheriff's like, fine, I'll leave my gun before I go confront this crack shot murderer.
Our friend who the only thing about him is he loves fucking guns.
Yeah, the only thing we know about this guy is that he loves guns and is involved in several robberies and murderers.
And murders, not murderers. They go to the house. Bart knows that he's found out, so he goes walking out of the house with his gun in his hand, just openly, with his gun in his hand. And the sheriff and the reporter say, Bart, we're your friend. We don't want this to end badly for you. Give yourself up right now, and you'll go to jail, but you'll live. Just give up. Just give yourself up.
He says he does the look, we'll make sure you get a fair trial.
Yeah. And Bart walks back into the house and says, fuck that.
He didn't even walk back in the house. He says that on the porch. He's like, yeah, well, that's not going to happen.
Yeah. He walks back into the house. He rips the phone out of the wall and goes and gets in the car with Lori, and they like peel out. Lori,
and they're telling him, like, look, Bart, you can't get away. Everyone here is a local. They know the roads and the mountains as well as you do. Like, you can't even, there's no path you can get around that we don't know about. Like, you're gonna be done, son.
You're gonna be done, son. So he goes and gets in the car to get away. Lori runs up with his nephew baby.
Is it a little boy? I thought it was a little girl.
I don't know, but
it doesn't matter. It's a baby.
She runs up with a baby.
Who is heavy as shit, by the way.
She runs up with a baby and goes, if we take the baby, they can't shoot at us. Which is nuts. Like, her plan for getting away is to perform a kidnapping. And Bart kind of grabs the baby out of her hands and goes, no, we can't do that. And puts the baby in his crib, or her crib, which is just outside.
It's a playpen. There's it's a just playpen outside.
Sitting outside in the driveway.
You know, where they keep the chickens.
They get in the car. They drive off. The sheriff and the reporter run into the house, get ready to call the police, and see that the phone is ripped out of the wall. So the sheriff's like, okay, the neighbor next door has a phone. I'm going to go over there. You just hold tight. So after this, there's a big chase scene where Lori and Bart are trying to drive away. There's a roadblock, so they have to veer off onto a road that takes them up into the mountains. While they're up in the mountains driving around, and I swear I thought that they were going to just drive off a cliff at this point. I thought the end of the movie was just going to be them flying off the side of a cliff.
This is where you were like, oh, I know this is going to end with them going off a cliff. And I was like, no, this is going to end with them shooting each other in the head. Like, this is going to end with a suicide, a double suicide. The only way gun crazy ends is with gun violence.
You were closer than me. But they don't drive off a cliff. Instead, their car breaks down as they're on top of this mountain. And they, you know, Bart tries and tries to get the car to start. It is just not going to do it. So they get out of the car and start running through the wilderness of the mountains. And this is another place in the movie where people are just falling down like crazy. In particular, Laurie just eats it.
Just goes face down.
Into a creek. And before that, she fell down again. Like, there are several times she falls down throughout the movie. There's another part when she has on that mink stole where she falls down and the stole falls off.
Like, that's just on the street, and that's funny enough.
Yeah. The but one, like, where she falls in the creek.
Wearing a dirty-ass evening gown and high heels running through the creek, just eats it. Just face first into the creek. It's hilarious. I laughed so hard.
They keep running. They run for a long time. Peggy's like, I'm so tired. And Bart says, it's the altitude, but we have to keep running. So they
How high are these mountains?
Apparently, it's the Rocky Mountains.
I mean, I think that she's probably tired because they're running from the police. Physically running from the police.
I live in the mountains, and I'm not at a high enough altitude that, like, I get immediately winded. You'd have to be on, like, the Matterhorn for that to happen.
Cashville is in Switzerland.
Okay.
That makes sense.
They run and run and run to the point where they go to this, like, foggy swamp. It looks like they're in the moors of Scotland.
It's like the movie suddenly puts them in Transylvania.
And they fall asleep.
Why are you out running at night? Don't you know what stalks these moors?
Woo!
It is bonkers.
They fall asleep in some tall grass in the swamp, and they wake up the next morning in the foggy-as-shit swamp. And this is the point in the movie where I thought it was going to do some kind of crazy cyclical thing, and they were going to get attacked and killed by that mountain lion.
I thought the mountain lion was going to show up and been like, you should have killed me when you had the chance, motherfucker.
That is not what happens.
Instead, it would have been amazing if that mountain lion was like 14 years old.
And it had like a big scar on its eye.
It's like, or even better if the mountain lion had shown up and been like, you once showed me kindness. I will guide you out. I will grant you one wish.
Instead, what happens is the reporter and the sheriff find them, and Bart and Laurie hear them approaching. And Laurie's like, they're here. They're here. I don't know what's going to happen. I can't let this happen. I'm not going to let this happen. And Bart's like, just stay here. Just stay down. But Laurie's like, no, I'll kill him. I'll kill him. And she gets up and she takes out her gun. And she's like pointing the gun toward their, you know, his old friends. So he shoots her.
Just shouting, I'll kill you.
Yeah. He shoots her, and then the sheriff shoots Bart, and they both die, and then the credits roll. Big The End titles over the screen.
So great. Great.
All right, Chris, let's do high points of Gun Crazy.
Oh, man, what isn't a high point in this movie?
Well, I want to point this one out first. And you mentioned this as we were watching, and I agree completely. This movie is really well shot.
Yeah, it's got some, like, really, like, even just the scene where they're driving up to the bank, and they've got the camera in the back seat, and they're actually driving through a town. Like, it feels weird, and it feels long, and it feels like, are we really just going to watch them drive to the set? But when you remember that it's 1950, and when you also find out that, like, no, this was done in one shot, like, it feels so ahead of its time. And there's, like, the shots where Bart is in the back of the car trying to shoot at the
I was gonna mention those shots too, because there's one of those shots is, like, so close to the top of his head. It's like almost like the camera's like almost digging down into his brain.
Yeah.
And it's so like such a good representation of how nervous and freaked out he is.
It's really, really, it's a really well shot movie, I think. Also, like, again, here's our standard Mel Gaze alert. Just when Laurie first shows up on stage, the way the trick shots are shot, like they're very complimentary. they accentuate her shape.
Well, there are other scenes later in the movie where she's wearing like, I don't know, kind of like form fitting clothes that are all very complimentary to her.
Yes.
The way she is shot throughout the movie, and even when she's like covered in muck, you know, she is shot to look good. But to be a B movie, as much of a B movie as this is, as much of a schlocky crime movie that starts out with the kid saying, "I love guns. I have to have guns. My whole life, I just want to shoot guns." To be a movie like that, it is exceedingly well shot and artfully shot.
And that it can pull that off, that it can pull off that it actually makes you feel sympathy for Bart after introducing him like that.
Yeah.
Where you're like, oh man, like Bart is creepy and disturbed. And then like as an adult, you're like, but he turned out okay. He just really likes guns. Like he's still kind of a weirdo, but he's all right. Like, you don't want to, like, the first 5 minutes of that movie, you're like, oh, Bart should go to jail.
Yeah.
And then you kind of want him to be all right at the end of it.
Bart is a monster at the beginning of the movie.
There's a part where the scene where they pull off the robbery and they're going to split up. And they decide, like, no, we're not going to split up. Like, whatever it is, whatever we're going to do, it's going to be together. And they get back in the car and they kiss each other before they drive off. Like, the looks on their faces, like, they're very good actors. Like, it's like they're so relieved that they don't have to be apart. Cause I thought that this was just going to be like, oh, she's just going to ditch him. Like Bart's going to have to answer for these murders alone. But that they get back together. Like I kind of wanted the movie to end there and be like, yeah, fuck the armor meat processing plant.
Well, that's another thing about this movie. It does not do what I expected. I said this right at the beginning. I expected this to be one of a few things. I expected it to be, more than anything, I expected it to be like this morality play kind of thing, right? Yeah. I expected it to be Reefer Madness, but with guns.
Yes, yes.
And it isn't. Of course there's a crime doesn't pay ending, but it makes Bart in particular pretty a sympathetic character. It gives a reason as to why he and Laurie both would want to commit crimes, right? It's not just like criminals are bad and here's why they're bad and they're crazy and cops win.
Yeah.
And so many movies from this era were that.
And it's also, it doesn't, like Laurie is presented as bloodthirsty and this kind of gets into low points as well. Like she is very clearly the, you know, this movie is about a woman making a man commit crimes with her sexy body. Like she threatens to leave him if he won't start going on a crime spree. But she's still like she's not entirely unsympathetic either.
Right. In some ways, it's explained that she's a victim of her background. She's not treated very well by Packy.
No, he treats her horribly.
Not that it excuses her for what she does, but it gives some reasons other than just she's an evil woman.
Yeah, she has a good reason to have a chip on her shoulder.
Right.
And I will say, even the movie even takes the time to make the woman she kills, that's another Bechdel test passing conversation.
Because the secretary's last name is Bechdel.
Oh, no, but the Abe Vigoda guy's, his last name was Bechdel.
Oh, right, okay.
But she like chastises her. She's like, you know, she's like, I expect to see you in a dress tomorrow. Like, cause she's at work in pants.
Yeah.
Which is not okay.
Not a great conversation to pass the Bechdel test with.
No, but it is I like that it takes the time to, nobody is purely innocent or purely guilty in this movie, you know?
Yeah.
Like even like, yeah, you know, he brought a gun to school, but he was just, you know, he's a fucked up kid. Like, he wasn't going to kill anybody. There's a lot of actually really strong character work in this. I was surprised. Yeah, I was not expecting it to be as layered as it is.
I think, and this is probably more the time than anything, but I'm amazed by the costuming in this movie. I'll make it a high point. Like, Clark Kent's jacket, their cowboy outfits, their, like, blue blood Connecticut outfits, all those disguises they wear are, like, they add a little weird fun to the movie, which, again, could be really preachy and moralistic, and then isn't. All right, let's do low points, Chris. What's your key low point for the movie?
Much like Brave, the fact that Bart and Laurie are both super good at guns is very irrelevant to the plot.
Yeah.
Like, it's just the source of their meet cute, which is weird.
It really seems like the crimes they commit should involve more shooting.
I feel like that would be like, all we get of the police actually finding out who they are comes from Packy just being like, I know who they are. Like, it would be better if they had pulled off some kind of amazing shot and the police were like, oh man, who are we dealing with? And that's how they figured out that they were dealing with these two incredible sharpshooters that are incredibly dangerous.
Yeah.
Like, we never really get the sense that the police, that they're doing anything that's actually that dangerous until they rob the armor plant and kill two people.
Yeah.
There's also a lot of pacing issues.
There are scenes that go on for way too long. As cool as the shot of in the back of the car while they're trying to park is, it's too long.
It is a scene where they're trying to park a car. And I guess maybe cars were a novelty.
And then the other scene where I think it's like, we're just going to have to sit here and watch this whole thing, is when they get identified by the FBI and there's a teletype machine that prints out a message that, like, the FBI is chasing after them now. And we'd watch that whole message come up on the teletype machine. And that is totally unnecessary.
It's so long. Like, and then it ends with, like, a guy just ripping it off and looking at it. And yeah, then we can linger on that for a minute.
That's all it is. My other low point, and we talked about Laurie, you know, having some sympathy and not being just an evil woman. That's true. She also is 100% a stereotype of the bad influence woman. She is Eve.
There's a scene where she literally, she's like, well, I'm going to leave you if we don't go on a crime spree. As well-rounded as her character kind of ends up being, I think that's us looking back from 2014.
Right.
And maybe seeing stuff that wasn't necessarily in the script. She's certainly, like, the catalyst for the movie and the one who drags Bart down this path to his ultimate death. And also, that he kills her at the end. That they don't die together, I thought, was kind of... It's a weird cheap cop-out to go, like, don't worry about Bart, everybody. He killed that Jezebel.
Well, it's the ultimate bros before hoes at the end of the movie.
Yes, that's true.
He picks his friends over his wife.
Yeah. I mean, like, I don't want any of them to die, really. But that he, you know, gives her one in the kidneys.
Yeah.
Instead of even, like, just, you know, tackling her, you know, pushing her to the ground.
Right, or just saying, like, don't shoot them.
I do feel like she's a better character than we expected going in, but she's still problematic.
She's not one-dimensional, but she's
not one-dimensional.
She fits that stereotype, that archetype, to a T. She is absolutely that, and therefore she is problematic, even though, again, she's a little better than you might expect.
Also, not really a low point, but that opening sequence in the courtroom is so nuts.
Yeah, and kind of from a different movie. Like, the kid doesn't act like Bart.
Yeah, like Bart grows up a lot from reform school in the army.
What it establishes doesn't really matter. The main thing that it establishes isn't that he loves guns, but that he doesn't want to kill things. Right? Living things.
Right.
That's the more important thing that it establishes than that he loves guns.
Yeah, which but Bart himself as a character does not come off as sympathetic in that scene.
No.
He comes off as a
jittery weirdo.
As a time bomb.
Yeah.
Like, oh yeah. Like, if it wasn't that he tried to steal a gun in front of a cop, like the next day there would have been 5 dead people. But again, that's not really, it's hard to call that a low point because I did enjoy that scene.
Yeah, I enjoyed that scene. It just, from a storytelling standpoint, all of that stuff in the courtroom doesn't really matter. You could start the movie with Bart as an adult saying, like, yeah, I got sent to reform school because I was a little insane about guns when I was a kid. Right? Yeah. Like, that's all you would have to do.
He comes back from being obsessed with guns with a box full of rare guns, I think is hilarious.
Yeah.
But no, like, overall, this might be one of the best movies we've watched.
Well, if we're doing that, let's do final thoughts.
Okay, final thoughts.
Chris, final thoughts about Gun Crazy from 1950.
This might be one of the best movies we've watched. And I don't mean just that it's one of the most enjoyable. It's certainly one of the most enjoyable. But, like, what's the previous best movie we watched? Hansel and Gretel Witch Hunters?
Yeah, that's
Miami,
that's
probably, Connection.
Probably, but I'd say Hansel and Gretel is probably in there among the best.
Yeah, this movie is, like, I would really recommend this movie to anybody. It's a great way to spend an hour and a half.
What I said at the opening part of the show was that I hoped that this was, like, people who don't really know what they're doing making it an entertaining movie. That's sort of what, like, some of our other favorite movies that we've watched are. Like Santa's Sleigh, right? Santa's Sleigh is just like a schlocky, silly, goofy movie that some people who are goofing off seem to make, right? That's not what this is. This is a very professionally made movie.
Yeah.
It's not up there with the best noir of all time. You know, it's not the Maltese Falcon. But as a B movie, it's way better than a shitty B crime movie ought to be.
Yeah, it ain't Roger Corman.
Yeah.
You know? And you say that it's not up there with the best noir of all time, but there's just enough kookiness to it, there's just enough ridiculousness to it, that it's also, unless it's a 2-minute scene of the camera pointed at a teletype machine, it's never boring.
Yeah, and as you talked about how good the actors are, they're kind of overact. They're absolutely overactors.
Oh yeah,
and they sort of make all these scenes into melodrama. But the movie is actually way more enjoyable because they are second rate Jimmy Stewart and Donna Reed, and not Jimmy Stewart and Donna Reed.
Because yeah, and they're saying the dialogue is so frequently just so off.
Yeah.
Like, I've just been reading about funerals, and what else do you do besides shoot guns? That's been enough till now. Like, look, I never really wanted to fuck, because I had guns.
Yeah.
But now that I see you can have guns and a sweet ass, well, let's just say.
And yet, like, the way they play things, I'm particularly thinking of Bart leering at Lori during her gun demonstration. Jimmy Stewart would have never played it that way. He would have had him sit there and kind of like clearly be interested, but sort of hide it. He would have had more layers to the performance.
Yeah, they would have been in love and not, I want to fuck right now.
And John Dahl just has fuck eyes. He's like, it is the dirtiest thing I've ever seen in a movie this old.
Everybody goes for it so hard in this movie.
And it makes it better. It's better because of that.
Again, Devin McCullen, right? Recommended this one?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
This, I was so worried about going into it because I'm like, you know, people love it when we suffer. But this movie is a hoot, man. This movie is really great. Devin, I had a lot of fun with it.
Devin, for real, thank you for recommending this movie. It was a lot of fun. And that's going to do it for this episode of Movie Fighters, everybody. Be sure to check out our website, which is moviefighterscast.com, if you did not get the show from there. If you got the show from the website and didn't get it from iTunes, check us out on iTunes, which you go search for Movie Fighters, and you can find us there.
Maybe write a couple of reviews.
Yeah.
Maybe drop a few stars our way.
The more reviews we get that are good, the more we're featured on iTunes, and just between you and me, there's a new podcast that stole our name, kind of close. It's close. So we need more of that on iTunes to be featured. If you want to send us an email, you can do that at moviefighterscast@gmail.com. You can send us requests for movies, questions, comments. If you want to sponsor the show, that is where you can do that. Our theme music is by Michael Kill. Our website was designed by Sean Bogus. Everybody, we will be back in 2 weeks. I think it's time for us to start up our holiday movies, Chris. Because it will be December. It will be December.
We already have some picks.
We do. It's very exciting.
Christmas is in danger, Matt.
Somebody's got to save it.
Somebody's got to save Christmas.
Stay tuned for that, everybody. We'll be back to our listener donor requests in January. But get ready for some holiday movies in December. Thanks for listening, everybody. Be back in 2 weeks.
This has been a Kaleidos Media production.